Welcome to Season 1, Episode 2 of That's What I Think, But I Could Be Wrong. My name is Todd Lorenz. I think cryptids exist that science should recognize. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald had a thing to do with the murder of John F. Kennedy. I don't think we know the truth about what happened on 9/11. I think the United States should meddle in foreign affairs as little as possible. And I believe the vast majority of politicians are corrupt. But hey, that's just what I think. And I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it's wrong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Now that's a good song right there. Hey, thanks for listening, thanks for downloading, thanks for streaming, thank you for whatever you're doing to hear me and my podcast. In case you don't already know, it can be found at toddlorenz.com/podcast or within your favorite podcast directory. If you haven't already, please give me a positive review and 5 stars and share this with your friends, share it on whatever social media site you use, Facebook, Twitter, whatever else is out there that this particular old man doesn't entirely understand. Back in episode 1, we talked about the Dog Man, which is probably my favorite cryptid to research or hear stories about. This week, I'll be discussing what is probably the granddaddy of all cryptid creatures, Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, the Hairy Man, the Kentucky Grass Man, the Chicken Man, Boogers, the Swamp Ape, a Yeti, Orang Pendek. There are plenty of names for this creature, and it has been sighted and reported in every state of the United States, and there are legends and sightings reported on nearly every continent of our world, but we'll get into that more later. All my references can be found on the episode's webpage, which can be found at toddlorenz.com/podcast. So let's start with a very basic question. If Bigfoot is real, what is it? Well, there are a number of theories out there. The main one seems to be that it is some kind of ape. For those of us living in the United States or Canada, it is an undiscovered North American ape. There are even some who think it's a leftover of Gigantopithecus, which is a prehistoric gigantic ape that seems to fit Bigfoot's description. But if eyewitness encounters can be believed, not all of these creatures look like apes. There is a school of thought that says that they are human, perhaps a forgotten species of man or a forgotten tribe. Or maybe it's not human at all. Maybe it's some kind of forest spirit. Maybe it's not from this world. There's actually a Bigfoot alien theory. Frankly, I don't believe that and probably won't discuss it beyond what I just said. And of course, most of the world thinks Bigfoot is simply a myth. Native Americans and Canadians and, well, really, I suppose, Native people from all over the world have their own legends about Bigfoot and those types of creatures. They have an oral history that goes back further than our written accounts. I found a website with some of the names and legends. I'll leave that for you to explore at your convenience. So if they are real, why are there different descriptions? Well, like the Dogman, there are different types of Bigfoot. Big feet? Sasquatches? Sasquatch? Whatever. There's 4 different types that have been consistently seen and reported. The first type is also referred to as the Patty type, so named because it resembles the creature seen in the Patterson-Gimlin film. I'll go into that footage in depth later. Patty type, or type 1, is the classic Sasquatch, and it resembles a cross between a human and a mountain gorilla. It has a large, powerful build, thick broad chest, black hair, and gray skin. There are other hair colors, including auburn, brown, cinnamon, and even sometimes white. I guess there are albino Bigfoot out there. The head has been described as rather small for the body. They sometimes develop a sagittal crest, which makes it sort of look like they're wearing a hoodie. They have a conspicuous brow ridge, a receding forehead, and deep-set eyes, reported to be proportionately further apart than humans' eyes. They have a flat face with prominent cheekbones and a square jaw, and the mouth sticks out just a little bit. The nose is almost human in shape, though maybe flat, and sometimes the nostrils point forwards. The average height is approximately 7 feet 10 inches. However, alpha males have been reported at 9 feet tall and larger. The average type 1 is estimated to weigh between 500 and 800 pounds. It's a big boy. Or girl. Type 2s are more ape-like than type 1s. They're reported in many areas of North America, but especially down south. They have a bestial man-like build and large eyes with large pupil dilation for night vision. They're most often reported as black, but also auburn, orange, and cinnamon. They are a bit smaller than type 1s, with their average height around 7 feet. The type 2s are often more aggressive and extremely territorial, and they often kill livestock. They leave human-like footprints, but seem very much like known primates, especially chimps, orangutans, and billy apes. Type 3s are something like a mandrill-human mix. They are said to look extremely savage or primal. Facial descriptions vary, but most often, a dog or bear or baboon-faced bipedal mammal is reported. They can be extremely tall, between 10 and 15 feet, with oversized heads that look more like a monster than an ape. They tend to live in the mountains, but will come down for food. Their fur is typically dark or deep brown. One witness reported seeing a Type 3 wearing animal pelts over its fur. They may eat humans, but reports are rare and most often based on legends. They tend to be reported with paranormal characteristics, like glowing red eyes or being bulletproof at close range. Type 3s are a recent classification. Traditionally, they were called Kukwis or Gugwis, a kind of man-eating ogre from Indian folklore. And then we have Type 4s. These reports come most often from the north and northeast. They've been referred to as early man Bigfoot and the American Almas. They're the most human-looking of the bunch. They're usually leaner than Type 1s, but still large and well-muscled. They have less facial hair than the other types, and the crown of their head can have thinning hair or even be bald. Some have reported beards and mustaches. Type 4s have round as opposed to conical heads. Their noses are hooded. The mouth is wider than a human mouth, but the teeth are square and look human. Skin color is pasty gray or black, and it has a leathery appearance. Some believe they are hybrids, part human and part primate. There are a couple of other types seen less frequently, including the Gnosqua in Native American folklore. It's supposed to be Bigfoot's larger, bulkier cousin with rock-hard skin, and they are supposed to twist the heads of their victims until they're decapitated. Let's not run into him anytime soon, yeah? And then finally we have the skunk ape. Skunk ape is a large, hairy, bipedal mammal that calls the Everglades home. That's Florida. Track castings confirm 4 toes. Males are about 7 feet tall and weigh more than 350 pounds. Females are smaller, standing about 5 to 6 feet tall, weighing 180 to 250 pounds. Males and females are covered with reddish-black fur. There is a pretty good picture of what's supposed to be a skunk ape. I've included a link in my show notes. I think it looks like an orangutan. Mostly like an orangutan, but it's difficult to be conclusive. So to summarize, Bigfoot is a large bipedal mammal, and there are at least 4 different types, with a couple of other subtypes. They vary in terms of looks, size, and aggression level. Kind of sounds like an ape, doesn't it? There are apparently 4 different types of apes. You have gorillas, orangutans, chimpanzees, and gibbons. Gorillas are the largest, but also the most docile. Orangutans get pretty big, but are also not particularly aggressive. Chimpanzees, on the other hand, can be extremely aggressive. Do a Google search for chimp attacks and see what you find. And then there are also gibbons, which are small, long-armed apes. They can be aggressive, particularly when it comes to territory. So, if Bigfoot are real, They aren't too dissimilar from their recognized ape cousins, assuming they are related. Not like I know, I don't have one that I'm studying in my basement or anything. But is it really that big a jump to make? New species are discovered all the time. I will discuss that a bit later. I discussed it in the Dogman episode. And if they are real, why is their existence denied? Well, you know, maybe get into that later. If Bigfoot is real, where is the thing? Where can it be found? Where is it sighted? Where is it seen? As it turns out, there are sightings reported in every one of the 50 United States, with the exception of Hawaii. There are only a couple of reports, but nothing modern. But Hawaii does have its own set of legends. But the sightings are not limited to our country. Sightings are reported in Canada. Canada's got plenty of sightings, plenty of legends, plenty of older tales or folklore, whatever you want to call it. Maybe Sasquatch has developed a taste for poutine and back bacon. Take off, eh? So where is he seen most frequently? Well, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, or BFRO, has a website, and they have a sightings page. Copying and pasting the data into Excel allows me to sort it by the number of sightings in each state, or however I want to sort it. But it looks like Washington is the hotbed, with currently 649 sightings, then California with 437, Florida with 315, Illinois, which surprises me, with 295, Ohio with 283, Oregon with 248, Texas with 232, Michigan with 214, Missouri with 141, and Georgia rounds out the top 10 with 132. Down at the bottom of the list is, well, Rhode Island and Delaware each have 5, and, well, they're the smallest states, so of course. Nevada, North Dakota, and Vermont all have less than 10, and then Connecticut has 13, Nebraska 14, New Hampshire 16, South Dakota 17, and Maine 17. Alaska only has 22, which surprises me. I kind of thought there would be more there. We have international reports in a number of countries. Australia has the Yowie. Russia has a creature. Vietnam has rock apes. Mongolia, Tibet, Nepal. China has wild men, the Philippines, Borneo, and Sumatra, Sri Lanka, Africa, Yugoslavia, and South America. So if he's out there, Bigfoot's all over the place. Really, I would think that just about every culture on the planet has some kind of myth or legend about a missing link type of creature or scary monsters in the darkness. Well, we know they have those, but legends often have a basis in fact. The story has to come from somewhere. So, is Bigfoot a myth? Is he a monkey or some kind of ape or a man? Well, that's what we're discussing. Is there any evidence that Bigfoot exists? Do we have any proof? Well, depending on who you are and what you believe, yes, there is. Perhaps the single most important piece of evidence that most people have seen, even if they don't realize it, is the Patterson-Gimlin film. In fact, aside from the Zapruder film in which JFK was killed, it may be the most analyzed piece of film in history. On October 20th, 1967, Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin filmed a Bigfoot. The film was and remains controversial. There are a number of studies and experts who claim the film is real or at the very least depicts an actual creature. It hasn't been faked. It's not a costume. It is supposed to be a real animal that remains uncategorized. And of course, there are just as many debunkers who claim it's a hoax. I'll explore that later. The experts who believe the film is genuine include Jeff Glickman, William Munns, and Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum. Jeff Glickman is a board-certified forensic examiner. He's also a fellow of the American College of Forensic Examiners, a senior member of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and at one point was the president-elect for the American Society for photogrammetry and remote sensing in the Puget Sound region. From 1995 to 1998, he conducted an intensive scientific analysis of the Patterson-Gimlin film called the NASI Report, NASI. His findings are highly positive that the creature filmed was a natural animal, and he closed with this statement, quote, "Despite 3 years of rigorous examination by the author, the Patterson film cannot be demonstrated to be a forgery at this time," end quote. The full NASI report is an analysis of the Bigfoot phenomenon, not just the Patterson-Gimlin film. However, the section dealing with the film is extensive. It estimates the size of the film's subject, studies its morphology, and its kinematics. The size? Well, they figure the subject is approximately 7 feet, 3.5 inches tall, with a waist perimeter of 81.3 inches and chest perimeter of 83 inches, and a mass of 1,957 pounds. Makes me feel thin. What about gender? Well, actually, many people believe that the subject in the Patterson-Gimlin film is a female. They believe they can see breasts swaying, and hence it has the nickname Patty. Patty's arm length is 43 inches. That's 5.5 standard deviations from the human, meaning that trait is present in 1 out of 52.5 million people. It essentially doesn't exist. And the leg length of the subject is 3.0 standard deviations from the human, which means it's present in about 1 out of 1,000 people. So the leg length is more common, but still quite rare. Morphology? Well, the subject's hand, the one most visible in the film, appears to be between that of a human and that of a gorilla. Hand flexion is evident in the film, demonstrating the hand is not a solid, inflexible prosthesis. In other words, the hand can be seen flexing. So if you think about just that for a second, in terms of whether or not this film is fake, whether or not there's someone in a costume, if the arms are that much longer than a human being's, 5.5 standard deviation, 1 out of 52.5 million people have this proportion or have this arm length. That means whoever is in this costume, if it is a costume, has arms that are that length. Either that, or there's a mechanism in the suit that allows the wearer to flex the hand. Seems like a long way to go, especially when you consider the technology at the time, but we'll get there on that too. The face and head appear to be gorilla-like in profile, but human-like when viewed from the front. The relationship between the frontal brow, nose, and mouth of the subject is between that of the mountain gorilla and the human. Kind of makes it sound like a missing link, doesn't it? The kinematics section investigates the motion of the subject's knee as compared to that of a human and illustrates one of the muscle groups seen in motion in the Patterson-Gimlin film. The page I'm reading from has a graphic illustrating the muscles being used, and again, all my references should be on my podcast page and in my show notes. A cycle for the human knee contains two distinct phases, a swing phase and a weight transfer phase. The film subject shows a more gradual transfer of weight rather than a separate phase. Assuming the subject knee delta is not overwhelmed with noise, the film subject is not employing typical human locomotion. In other words, it ain't moving like people do. In further support of that, there's a guy who goes by the name Thinker Thunker on YouTube, who examines all kinds of Bigfoot videos and tries to decide whether they're real or hoaxes. In terms of how Patty moves versus how people move, he measures the, quote, angle of her shin rise, unquote, at 73 degrees. He says it's the same for every step the subject takes. A sampling of people places our angle of shin rise at 52 degrees. He says the measurement is the same for every person walking normally. If it's true, it does illustrate a fundamental difference between the subject in the Patterson film and human beings. However, without further studies, or maybe even one comprehensive study that isn't by a YouTuber, how much can this be believed? so it doesn't move like a human being. What about how the creature looks? William Munns is a special effects and makeup designer. His credentials include working as a makeup and creature costume specialist for film and television, being a world champion wildlife artist, theme park robotics designer, computer graphics professional with expertise in 3D visualizations, a filmmaker with experience in 16mm film, and inventor of a patented character animation software system. Busy guy. Smart guy, probably. He spent 7 years analyzing and studying the Patterson-Gimlin film with state-of-the-art technology. His conclusion, quote, "The film is authentic, and the creature seen in that film is in fact some real biological entity often called a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, and is not a hoaxed figure accomplished with a normal human in a costume of any kind." End quote. That sounds rather definitive, doesn't it? Okay, moving on. Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum is an expert on foot morphology and locomotion in primates. He's a full professor of anatomy and anthropology, a professor of the Department of Anthropology at Idaho State University, an adjunct professor of occupational and physical therapy, and is an author, having written Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science, and Mosby's Dissector for the Rehabilitation Professional, Exploring Human Anatomy. You may have seen him in different television shows and documentaries discussing Bigfoot. He and Bill Munns collaborated to study the Patterson film subject to determine, in terms of musculoskeletal anatomy, if it is biologically real or costume material flaws. They studied the creature's anatomy and compared it to human surface anatomy and great ape anatomy. Then they compared it to fur costume design and form. The resemblance to real anatomy is not only apparent, but prevails as the more probable explanation for the nature of the Patterson-Gimlin film hominid. Quote, "The presence of equivalent surface anatomy features in the hominid body that are consistent with observed traits of the Patterson-Gimlin film hominid nullifies previous claims that such traits of necessity indicate a costume. Rather, they are consistent with the conclusion that the Patterson-Gimlin film hominid indeed represents a novel primate species." End quote. That also seems pretty definitive, doesn't it? They're essentially saying that by comparing what they see in the film to what they see with people and with apes, this is a real thing or a real being and not someone in a costume. The site I'm using for reference has links to any number of articles and pictures illustrating the points. I encourage you to check it out if you're at all interested in the topic. Check my podcast page or show notes for more information. So, there are many experts out there who believe the Patterson-Gimlin film is genuine. Are there those who believe the film was a hoax, that Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin faked the whole thing? Yes, there are. One of the more common theories is that Roger Patterson had the costume made by a gentleman named Philip Morris, who had a costume and stage prop business, Morris Costumes, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. He claims that Roger Patterson called him in 1967 and had the suit made. He even had an ad in the trades. I'm looking at a picture of it. A sale on gorilla suits. Some were used in movies and TV that were $750. Now they're only $435. Granted, that was a bigger sum of money then than it is now, but that's what he supposedly used. He said he shipped the suit to Patterson. Patterson later called him, asking how to make the suit more realistic. He wanted extra fur and asked how to hide the zipper and how to make the person in the costume look larger. Morris said he told him to brush the fur over the zipper and use hairspray to hold it, get some football shoulder pads and sticks for the arms to give the illusion of being taller, use stuffing to get more bulk. That was the last he heard from Patterson. And then, of course, later on he sees the film, but decides not to say anything, following some sort of magician's code or costumer's code, kind of like maintaining kayfabe if you're a wrestling fan. Of course, a lot of you aren't. Patterson died in 1972. Morris came forward after that, first telling the story at trade shows, and eventually the story gained mainstream traction. There's a video of him where he discusses how he made the suit and how Patterson added breasts to make the subject look female. So take that as you will. We also have a man who claims to be the guy in the costume. Bob Hieronymus, H-E-I-R-O-N-I-M-U-S, claims that Roger Patterson promised him $1,000 for his role in the film. Bob says he never saw the money, and he kept quiet for most of his life about it because he was afraid of being prosecuted for fraud. Furthermore, many have questioned the character of Roger Patterson. He's been called a liar, and he supposedly took money from investors for the film, but never produced any return. There are many others who both support and debunk the Patterson-Gimlin film. To say that it's polarizing is a bit of an understatement. How do I feel about it? At one point, I believed it wholeheartedly, but research has led to some doubts. But it's important to point out that doubts about the film don't necessarily translate to doubts about whether or not Sasquatch or Bigfoot is real. There is other evidence of this creature. There are other videos. There are tons of pictures. Of course, none of the videos or pictures are as clear or definitive as the Patterson-Gimlin film. Otherwise, you'd know more about them. And there are many, many track castings, in other words, castings of footprints. How much of it is believable? Well, none of the pictures or videos are all that great. They're often grainy and could just as easily be hoaxes as anything genuine. Off the top of my head, I can't come up with anything as compelling as the Patterson-Gimlin film. Some of the sites I have on my podcast page and in my show notes have videos and pictures, as well as analyses of them. Feel free to have a look if you like. But, like with Dogman, I'm fascinated by eyewitness encounters. There are plenty of podcasts and YouTube shows out there that talk to witnesses on a weekly basis or even more often. Sasquatch Chronicles is probably my favorite. I also enjoy Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio, Bigfoot Crossroads, and Cryptid Brothers Investigations. On the first episode of my podcast, the one about the Dogman, I covered how eyewitness testimony isn't always reliable. And while I know that's true, the number of stories out there is just staggering. As I record this, Sasquatch Chronicles has 419 episodes. Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio has 118. Cryptid Brothers is relatively new. They only have 36 episodes. And Bigfoot Crossroads has 43, though they've been intermittent over the years. And they're less about talking to eyewitnesses and more about the hosts telling stories, including witness reports. I think most of the people who appear on these shows clearly believe what they're saying. They've seen something. They're freaked out. They were frightened, scared to death. Either that or they're some of the finest actors on the planet. No, they are seeing something. What is it? That's kind of the question, isn't it? There are hunters who have claimed to have shot Bigfoot. The most recent that comes to mind is a guy named Justin Smeja, however you want to pronounce it, S-M-E-J-A. He claims to have shot a Bigfoot and an infant, or a toddler Bigfoot. He's apparently passed a polygraph exam, but polygraph examinations are not admissible in court for a reason. To be totally honest, I'm certain I could beat one. And they performed a DNA test on some of the flesh that they went back to find. He said he buried them, or at least one of them, and they went back to find the flesh and do a DNA sample that turned out to be a bear or human. I don't know if I believe his story. He tells it well, but that doesn't make it true. What about TV shows? Something like Finding Bigfoot. Well, I've watched that show. I think I've seen most of the episodes, not all of them. It's pretty much lost me at this point. But when I did watch consistently, it was mainly to hear the stories told at the town hall meetings and to see any footage that witnesses happened to possess. I didn't care about their running around the forest with a camera crew. It seemed unlikely, at best, to find anything, if there was anything to be found. Sasquatch, if it exists, is difficult to find. It's elusive and reclusive. I don't believe running around the forest, making lots of noise, with a camera crew in tow, will induce Sasquatch to reveal itself. Don't get me started on shows like Mountain Monsters and the many variations thereof on whatever the name of the network is, Destination America or whatever. Those things are a complete fabrication and total trash. I got sucked in and watched a few of them, mainly again because of witness footage, but I'm convinced most of that was faked. The real tipping point for me was when they were supposed to have been chasing a Sasquatch and they were on its trail and there were screams going on and the sound effects they used were atrocious. At some point they concluded that Sasquatch had a devil dog for a pet or a dog man or something and was using it, and I was like, oh man, just stop. And I never watched another minute, not even as comedy or stupidity or a way to kill time. I think I'd rather watch paint dry now. If you like the show, more power to you. I'm not watching anymore. And I'm honestly a bit ashamed that I ever did watch it. And speaking of shame, there are plenty of those who have none with regards to Bigfoot and creating hoaxes. In fact, the term Bigfoot can be traced back to a hoax perpetrated by Ray Wallace. He lived from April 21st of 1918 to November 26th of 2002. He was employed as a logger for most of his life and also worked the construction industry, working on roads through the majority of Washington, Oregon, and California. In August of 1958, the Humboldt Times of Eureka, California was the first to use the term Bigfoot within their story about a series of large footprints discovered by an employee of Wallace's Humboldt County Construction Company. Ray Wallace owned and operated it. The footprints were 16 inches long and had a gait 46 to 60 inches. That's about double the gait of most people. Ray said he had a great deal of Bigfoot film footage. He estimated everything from 6,000 to 15,000 feet of 16-millimeter film, consisting of Bigfoot hurling rocks, feeding on frogs, and so forth. He maintained that his films, photos, and tapes were authentic. However, none of these films have surfaced since he died. When he died of heart failure, his son exposed him as a hoaxer. Wallace owned big wooden feet that he used to make the fake Bigfoot tracks, and his household remembers him as a prankster. Now, does that mean that all Bigfoot sightings are fake? All track castings are fake? No, of course not. However, Mr. Wallace had a good time and got one hell of a laugh at the expense of those who chose to believe him. Rick Dyer has been involved in two separate Bigfoot hoaxes. In 2008, he and Matthew Witten, and later on Tom Biscardi, perpetrated a Bigfoot hoax involving a costume stuffed with possum roadkill, entrails, and slaughterhouse leftovers. In 2012, he had a Bigfoot costume or a Bigfoot specimen made and said he was going to tour with it, claimed to have DNA testing done that confirmed it was an unknown species, etc., etc., etc. Both times, he eventually confessed to the hoaxes. And with regards to Bigfoot, no one should ever believe anything this guy says ever again. There are plenty of other hoaxes and rumors out there involving Bigfoot. The website BigfootEncounters.com has a couple of pages devoted to them. Feel free to take a look if you're so inclined. So if Bigfoot exists, is it dangerous? Well, yes and no is possibly the answer. The following is a quote. Sasquatches have likely had many opportunities to attack humans. However, only two reports describe violent attacks on humans, and just one describes the killing of a human. That comes from President Teddy Roosevelt in his book, The Wilderness Hunter, published in 1890. A chapter in Roosevelt's book recounts the story of two trappers who were stalked by a Sasquatch-like animal in a remote region believed to be in present-day Wyoming or Montana. One of the trappers fired his rifle at the Sasquatch during their first night in a new location, apparently missed, and the animal continued to stalk them. The trapper's camp was ransacked a couple of times. It occurred during the day while trappers were out checking their beaver traps. After the second night, the trappers decided to vacate the area. Before they left, while they collected their traps, the men split up. One was delayed as he prepared beaver caught in the last of the traps. The other went back to camp. His body was found by his partner later that day near the campfire. The dead man had a broken neck, which showed teeth or claw marks, but the body was not eaten. So yeah, there's a former president associated with Bigfoot. How interesting is that? According to the BFRO, Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, there are no modern reports of human beings being injured or killed by a Sasquatch. I don't think that's the case. In fact, there is a recent episode of Sasquatch Chronicles, episode number 413, in which a man describes how his cousin was pushed by Bigfoot, which broke a few of his ribs and punctured his lung. It began with some rock throwing. It's often reported that Bigfoot or Sasquatch will throw rocks or tree limbs or logs and break tree branches or break trees or shake trees in what is called a bluff charge or display. It's a very common ape behavior. Chimpanzees and gorillas may not throw rocks, but they do charge, they do shake things. Chimpanzees in particular will use whatever they find in their environment to show how big and bad they are. In episode 413 of Sasquatch Chronicles, the two cousins were sitting in a boat on a lake fishing. Something threw rocks at them. One of the guys said he saw what he called a black man, a large black man, duck behind the tree. He insisted they go ashore. When they did, he picked up rocks of his own and threw them at the tree. This turned out to be a very bad idea. It caused the situation to escalate. Now, this guy clearly didn't know what he was dealing with, but if you ever find yourself in the woods and something throws rocks at you, I humbly suggest you don't return fire, and in fact, just go ahead and leave. The witness said the Bigfoot eventually charged and covered the ground between them, I think he said it was about 40 yards, with remarkable speed. He said he'd never seen anything move that fast. But before he knew it, the thing was gone. He had no idea, but the Bigfoot had hit or pushed or shoved his cousin. He'd flown back into the water, and turned out he had some broken ribs and a punctured lung. They eventually got out of there, and he received the necessary medical care, and is apparently fine, at least in terms of his health. They have had an ongoing situation, but I'll get to that a bit later. It delves into another topic related to Sasquatch. Oh, and I think it's important to make a note of something. The animal, the Sasquatch or Bigfoot, started the encounter with what it probably considered to be a warning. It threw a few rocks in their direction. It didn't hit them, it didn't hurt them, until one of the men responded with aggression of his own. Then things, as I said, escalated. There aren't too many stories, or I should say I haven't heard too many stories, of a Bigfoot actually hurting someone. When they do, it is nearly always in response to something a human has done that is perceived as aggressive. A story comes to mind, one I heard that supposedly took place in Colorado, and I don't recall many specifics and I couldn't find the episode, but essentially a hunter took a shot at a Bigfoot after his paid guide told him not to. The animal responded by charging, grabbing the guy by the neck and squeezing until his head literally popped off. I have no idea how true the story is, but if these animals are as big and bad as people say, it's not too difficult to believe. However, stories like this are really not the norm. Why do I say that? Because we have encounter stories that are reported. In other words, we have people who see them and get away to tell the tale. If Bigfoot was exceptionally dangerous or aggressive, witnesses wouldn't get away. More often than not, they're chased out of the woods by what the Bigfoot does. The throwing of rocks and tree limbs or logs, the breaking of branches, the growling, yelling, the screaming, the displays and bluff charges. But there are missing persons cases in forests and state parks and recreation areas. The Missing 411 series, David Pilates never postulates what he thinks is causing the problem, but many think it's a Bigfoot or a Dogman. I honestly don't know. I will say this. These things, if they exist, are huge, fast, and powerful. If they want to kill you, you're gonna be dead. It's just that simple. There are some who believe that Bigfoot also uses infrasound. What is infrasound, you ask? Infrasound is a frequency below 20 hertz that humans cannot hear. However, several species of animal produce and react to it. The BBC states that elephants use infrasound to keep track of a herd over large distances. Whales also use infrasound to communicate over large distances, even hundreds of miles. There's a theory suggesting the tsunami in 2004 produced infrasound frequencies, which enabled animals to flee hours before it hit Asia. The roars and purrs of big cats, like tigers, have some infrasound frequencies, which induces fear in its prey. So why does this matter? Well, controlled experiments by British scientists demonstrated that infrasound produces a range of bizarre effects in people, including anxiety, extreme sorrow, chills, apparitions, and hallucinations. What does that matter with Bigfoot? Well, people that see Bigfoot often report an incredible sense of fear. Maybe the animal has a growl which includes infrasound and induces fear. Of course, seeing a giant ape which looks like a monster that isn't supposed to exist might induce fear all on its own. What about the hallucination aspect? Well, some report that Bigfoot can cloak. And when I say cloak, I mean like you see in the Predator films, the creature using its device to cloak itself from view, or maybe an invisibility cloak, like you see in Harry Potter. Apparently that invisibility cloak is a real military thing, but that's another story. Do I think Bigfoot can do it? No, not really. But that doesn't mean it ain't true. However, I think it's more likely that the infrasound used by the animal may cause fear and hallucinations, including the appearance of cloaking. They can camouflage themselves exceptionally well, we know that. They have to be able to do so to be as large as they apparently are and remain hidden from view. But to cloak themselves, bend the light, and so forth, I don't think so. But the hallucination aspect, that may contribute to what witnesses say they see, or don't see in this case. So are they dangerous? They're like any wild animal. They can be. I wouldn't want to see a mountain lion in the wilderness. I love wolves, and I don't believe they normally attack people. That doesn't mean I want to run into one. Same goes with a Sasquatch or a Dogman, for that matter. If there's a giant undiscovered ape running around our wilderness, he can stay there. It's a good place for him. And actually, newly discovered species are relatively common. I covered this some on the Dogman podcast. I'll include links to a couple of sites on my podcast page and in the show notes. Suffice it to say that there is plenty of space out there for an animal to hide, even a giant ape. There's an animal called a billy ape, B-I-L-I, it was officially recognized in 2003. The billy ape is massive by chimpanzee standards. Heights can exceed 5 feet, about gorilla height, Their skulls are larger than chimp skulls, and their footprints are larger even than gorillas. Unfortunately, there have been relatively few detailed observations of the Billy Ape, and no thorough examination of either remains or a living Billy Ape in captivity. They are also described as having silver backs and snouted faces, though the latter is uncommon. The locals in Billy refer to Billy Apes as lion killers. While chimps tend to stay in trees and make good prey for big cats, Billy Apes nest on the ground like gorillas and have been reported to hunt lions. Wow, right? So why do I mention the Billy Ape? Well, there's a population of them currently living in 15 million acres of forest in the Congo. 20 of the 50 U.S. states have at least 15 million acres of forest. We have lots of room, folks. So if Bigfoot is real, and we apparently have room, why is the creature's existence denied? In a word, money. Isn't that always the case? Follow the money, folks. It's not necessarily just a matter of room. It also might be a matter of where the creature is and what other resources are available on that land. Once upon a time, there was a spotted owl controversy. For hundreds of years, a handsome dark brown owl with white spots made its home in the lush old-growth forests of the Pacific Northwest. Over the last 150 years or so, because of heavy logging, the ancient forests have dwindled on mostly federally owned lands, and the number of spotted owls dwindled. As you might guess, conservationists and the logging industry had an ongoing conflict for years. Today, the spotted owl is still alive. Numbers continue to decline, partly because of a competing owl. And the logging industry is still going strong, though it isn't what it once was. So how does that relate to Bigfoot? Well, if the animal does exist, there would be animal rights groups who lobby for its protection. In fact, back in 1969, Skamania County, Washington, passed the Undiscovered Species Protection Act. The law states, quote, any premeditated, willful, and wanton slaying, harassing, or any malicious activities, end quote, toward, quote, a primate mammal variously described as Bigfoot, Sasquatch, an ape-like creature, or a subspecies of Homo sapiens, end quote, would be considered a felony and punishable by a fine not to exceed $100,000 and or imprisonment not to exceed 10 years. But that apparently wasn't enough. In 1991, Washington's Whatcom County passed a resolution declaring the county a Sasquatch Protection and Refuge Area. Now, I suspect these laws have more to do with promoting tourism than protecting anything, but these laws are in place before the species is even recognized. What happens once it is? It's entirely feasible that there would be a conflict between industries who seek to profit from the natural resources available on land that would be set aside for Sasquatch, and those who wish to protect the animal and or its land. What about the camping industry? I'm looking at a report titled The Outdoor Recreation Economy, produced by the Outdoor Industry Association back in 2012. It states, the economic benefits provided by the outdoor recreation economy are as follows. 6.1 million American jobs, 646 billion with a B as in boy in outdoor recreation spending each year, and tax revenues also with a B as in boy, 39.9 billion in federal tax revenue and 39.7 billion in state and local tax revenue. Chew on those numbers for a second. According to BusinessWire.com, those numbers are increasing. There's an article titled, Camping is Up in the United States, Trend Expected to Continue as Millennials Seek the Positive Health Impacts of Time Spent Outdoors. So how would the outdoor recreation economy be affected if the existence of Bigfoot was acknowledged? I don't camp anyway. To me, it's pretending to be homeless. But if I did, I might be inclined to curtail that particular habit if I knew there was some dangerous ape out there possibly waiting to rip me apart with its bare hands. You know, just a thought. Again, we don't know for fact that A, they exist, and B, that they're dangerous. But I wouldn't go camping anywhere that, say, cougars were known to habituate. Why? Well, because they can rip me up. And granted, it's not likely to happen, but it has happened. If I'm in a boat and I see a shark in the water, I ain't jumping in. So I'm sure revenues would be affected. But what about public safety? Would you wind up with a bunch of yahoos out there trying to shoot these animals or bring them in alive? And might that not result in harm to innocent people? Mass hysteria and groupthink are real things, and if witness stories can be believed, there are government agencies, or at the very least, small teams of people out there trying to keep the secret and intimidating witnesses. But I'll cover that more here shortly. Now, what if you are the government and you know these animals are out there? What would you do about it? Well, do you go public? Possibly not for the reasons we just discussed. Money and resources. So do you eradicate them? Well, no, again, because that would cost money and take up resources, and these animals are powerful, and if they live in family groups, they can be a handful to deal with. Not only that, but if the story gets out, there's bound to be public outcry about the needless slaughter of what would be an endangered species. It's bound to happen. It could be they've already tried to study them in captivity, and if that's the case, maybe they don't do well in a cage or in some kind of enclosure. Some animals don't survive. I'll give you an example. Great white sharks are notoriously difficult to keep in captivity. They die before too long. The only aquarium that has been at least partly successful was the Monterey Bay Aquarium in California. They spent a decade planning their white shark program. In 2004, they acquired a shark that became the first great white to survive in captivity for more than 16 days. Wow, just 16 days. This one was on display for more than 6 months before it was released back into the ocean. In the following years, the Monterey Bay Aquarium hosted 5 more juvenile white sharks for temporary stays before ending the program in 2011. Yes, we do have apes in captivity. They seem to do reasonably well in zoos, but maybe that just isn't the case with Sasquatch, if it exists. So if you can't keep it in captivity, that means you can't really study it. And if you can't study it, that means you can't understand it, and people fear what they don't understand. So if Sasquatch is real, maybe our government does have legitimate reasons for hiding that fact. And if so, there are people who are tasked with keeping witnesses quiet. Think of it this way. When the atomic bomb was being developed, it was considered treason to divulge any information publicly. The state keeping secrets in the name of public safety and protecting those secrets with the threat of treason is nothing new. Is the situation the same? No. Is it comparable? Well, maybe. I'm just pointing out an instance where the government had a vested interest in keeping people quiet. People who see Sasquatch and come forward are largely ridiculed. Don't have to look too far to find evidence of that. But sometimes it goes further. Earlier in this podcast, I mentioned episode 413 of Sasquatch Chronicles. Again, 2 cousins were attacked by Bigfoot and one of them was seriously injured. They reported what happened to authorities, and that started a whole new set of problems. There's a 2-man team that witnesses who come forward often report. One looks like a businessman, the other kind of looks like a rough, tough guy, a burly guy, kind of like a biker. And they do this kind of good cop, bad cop thing with the witnesses to try and keep them quiet. The witness will report seeing a Bigfoot or something that looks like an ape, and will be told by these guys, no, that's not what you saw. You saw a bear. And if you know what's good for you, that's what you'll say. There are consequences for not complying. In the case of these 2 cousins on episode 413, one lost his job because of rumors spread by these 2 guys. You can check the episode for yourself. It is freely available. This two-man team who intimidates witnesses and tells them what to say is frequently reported by eyewitnesses, and their appearance and MO are consistent. So where do I come down on all this? Is Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Yowie, whatever the heck else you want to call it, real? Does it exist? I have to say yes. I believe it does. Despite, really, a lack of real evidence. And by real, I mean being able to see the thing in person. I know chimpanzees are real because I can go to a zoo and see one. I can see documentaries where the animal is clearly shown, and clearly shown interacting with people. We don't have that with Bigfoot, so why do I believe? I believe because of all the eyewitness reports that are available. Like with the Dogman, these people are seeing something. Are there cases of mistaken identity? Certainly. Have there been hoaxes? Of course. I've discussed a number of them, and there are far more. But the legends for these things go back further than the written word, and they continue to be seen today. Would I want to run into one? Absolutely not. I have utterly no desire to run into anything that really has the potential to tear me up or rip me apart. Just don't want to. In any case, yes, I believe Bigfoot exists. I think our government knows about it. I think their existence is concealed. I don't know why exactly, but I have provided some speculation I believe to be reasonable. I think Bigfoot is real. But hey, I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it's strong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Thank you for listening to Season 1, Episode 2 of That's What I Think, But I Could Be Wrong, Bigfoot, Monkey, Man, or Myth. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please give me a positive rating and review so that I can grow the podcast, and please come back for future episodes. If this was not your cup of tea, please try a different episode. Maybe you'll like it better. I've decided I'll end each podcast with one of my own songs. I will try to use one that's related to the topic whenever possible. In this case, I just don't have one. So I'll go with one of my favorites. This is called Masks from my 2014 album Hope. Thanks again for listening, and be good.
You wear your mask, but try and get by to fit in the world. Such an easy lie, 'cause you need shelter, you need food, so you need money and a job, so you wear your mask, oh, oh, to try and get by, try and get by. Trying to do the right thing, but that's no easy trick, 'cause I need shelter, I need food, so I need money and a job, so I wear my mask. Try and get by, try and get away, the mask to hide the pain, hide the tears. though we are is so much more than this, so much more than we choose, big chips to show. Thank you.